The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
Final seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
Here's your host, 6'1", former Oklahoma Sooner basketball player, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker Campbell, welcome back to hour number two at SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio, and the Big E Sports Show. So in our next segment, we're going to go inside the ropes, our weekly segment with PGA professional and author, the great Larry Miller. Of course, Mr. Miller joins us each and every week on our network, and we are going to break down the latest PGA Tour news and notes, and also we're going to dive into his new book, What He Never Told the World, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental. Good evening, Larry.
Good evening, and great to be with you again, as usual.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to tee it up, and let's start off our conversation with a full recap of the Players' Championship. You know, when you were on the show last week, we previewed it. Ian Poulter was denied the Players' Championship victory by Siwoon Kim, this 21-year-old Korean who becomes the youngest winner of this event. He's an amazing competitor. How would you summarize how this tournament ultimately played out?
Well, and he was near, you know, the really funny thing was that he was near the end of the line of all the stats going into the tournament. He was very low in all the stats. And, you know, it just it's amazing from week to week that these players pop up. But I'll tell you something about those Koreans. I spoke to a caddy who caddies for one of the LPGA Korean ladies,
mm-hmm.
and he's caddied for her for years. And he said that growing up in Korea, they practice putting and chipping literally 5-6 hours a day. He said, no joke, he said they literally spend that much time every day chipping and putting and pitching. And so, and he said they all have the same technique when they putt. If you'll notice, they all have the same type grip, the same type stroke, stance, and that's the way they're coached from an early age. But they work so hard. So anyway, getting back to him, it's really not that much of a surprise because the guy, he did win a tournament. He won one tournament at Greensboro before. And Sawgrass, you know, the reason it's not a surprise is that Sawgrass is a different kind of course than you see week to week on the PGA Tour. It's very demanding accuracy-wise. It has a few long holes, but more importantly, placement of shots and strategy comes into play a lot more at Sawgrass. And, of course, sitting right there by the ocean, the wind blows most of the time. It's a ball striker's course, and the Koreans are known for their meticulous, the way they go about ball striking and mm-hmm. hitting shots. And let me tell you the difference between a great ball striker and a great player. A great ball striker, what that means is that they're hitting a lot of greens in regulation. They hit the fairways, they hit the greens. They hit pure golf shots, accurate shots. A great player is a great scorer, knows how to score, typically has a great short game, chipping, pitching, putting, near the top of the stats in those, especially putting. And so you've got great ball strikers and you've got great scorers, great players. Now, when you get a real elite player, you get both. You get both. You get a person who can hit the greens in regulation on a consistent basis, but also is very strong with the short game and with strategy and course management. Let's take Sergio Garcia, for instance. He's probably one of the top three ball strikers in the world, but he is not known for his course management and or really his putting. But his ball striking is so good that every year at Sawgrass, you see him. He won one year. He came close this year again. And so because of his great ball striking on that particular course, he's always near the top. You know, there's such a thing as courses for horses. You know, they call it in horse racing where a horse loves a track and always runs well. Mm-hmm. Well, it's the same with golfers. They like certain golf courses. They play well, and certain courses fit the eye optically and visually a lot better than others, and they're just more comfortable there. So you frequently see a player play very well at one venue on a consistent basis.
So how do you teach that at an early age to be able to have that type of game that you're talking about?
You have to work on all facets equally, but especially, you know, I mentioned the Koreans spending 5-6 hours a day on the short game. That is so important. When I coach young people today, I try to get them to spend 70-80% of their time from 100 yards in. And that means all the wedge shots, the bunker shots, the pitch shots, the chips, the putts, from all different lies. And when you practice those shots, you don't just get on the practice range and hit one after the other. You get out on the golf course and take 10 or 12 balls and throw them around the green. Just throw them. Let them fall where they may, mm-hmm. whether it's in a bunker or side of the green, and then walk around and try to get those up and down, because that's what you face when you actually play. If you're on the range hitting one after the other, that's no good, because you might get one out of 1,000 shots just like that on the golf course. So you've got to learn how to score by playing all sorts of lies, different terrains, side hill, uphill, downhill lies, high grass, you know, medium grass, and so on. The only way to learn that is to get out on the course and do it. And that's what the Koreans do, and that's what I try to get young people to do that I help.
We are inside the ropes with Larry Miller, PGA professional and author of his new book, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental. Yes, we're doing a recap on the Players' Championship, TPC Sawgrass, and I think was perhaps a little bit disappointing, Larry, to see so many of the top players, you know, struggle mightily, having those high scores. And you say this many, many times on our programs, you know, double bogeys, that's going to jack up your scorecard very, very quickly. I mean, it's, for me, it's not fun watching a train wreck. I mean, I enjoy and probably appreciate the Masters more. I want to see, you know, I don't want to see, you know, some of my favorite players out there struggling.
Yeah. Well, you know, some people do, you know, some people like to see a bunch of birdies. It's exciting. Mm-hmm. And then you got other people who typically the real high handicappers love to see the pros struggle, you know, because they can commiserate with them. And, and you know, they say, oh, look, they're human. You know,
sure,
they can
make
a triple and hit two balls in the water. But I think for the most part, from week to week, the fans love to see great play and birdies. But, you know, but Sawgrass is right there. I mean, it's always windy, and it's extremely windy. I'm talking, you know, 20, 25, 30-mile-an-hour winds. And that is the one thing that brings world-class players down. Distance does not do it. You can make the greens as fast as you want. That doesn't do it. You can grow the rough up. That still doesn't stop them. But high wind stops great players. It's the only thing that brings them down. If you remember in the British Open one year, Tiger Woods shot 86 or something, and when it was blowing 40 miles an hour. And that's the one thing, and that was in his prime when he was on during that stretch when he played so well. So it's just an example of what wind can do. And so that's why you see a lot of the top players struggling on that course. It's a double-edged sword. You've got the wind, and then you've got the demands of Sawgrass. Sawgrass is unique. It's extremely demanding accuracy-wise, and you can't just get up there and blast away off the tee. You got to really think about how far you want to hit it, where you want to place it, because you can get in spots there that will result in a double bogey really quick.
Have you ever played it, Larry?
Oh, yeah. I've played it many times. And, in fact, when I was in the finals of the Champions Tour Q School one year, we were there. And I've played it numerous times. And, you know, you learn as you play it. The first time you play it, you don't realize that you get up, you just whack away at the driver, you know, or something at three wood. And you walk down there, you think you've hit a pretty good shot. And you've got no shot. You know, you're behind a mound or in high grass to a small green. And so it takes two or three rounds to start figuring out what clubs to use and where to hit it. But it's a great golf course. I love it because it's strategic, and it's my kind of course. I love the courses where you have to think your way around and not just blast away to a wide open space. So, yeah, it's fun to play. But it's you know, it can be a little bit deflating at times, too, when the wind starts blowing.
Well, and you were talking about just the demands of the layout of the course. How did you adjust or recalibrate your game to deal with the winds that you're talking about?
You know, I relied on something that my teacher, Tommy Bolt, told me many, many years ago. First, you map the course out. You figure out where the safe landing areas are. But he gave me a tip one time, and he told me to get on the tee box, look down there, figure out about where the 150 is, where the 150 marker is. Whatever club you need to hit off the tee, try to place it on that 150 marker. Because he said, if you're in the fairway all day with a 7 or 8 iron in your hand, you're going to make a lot of birdies and not many bogeys. And that was a great tip, because if you just blast away at the driver, as I said before, you know, you can hit a really great drive, and it's just not the right club to hit, and you get down there, and you're in trouble.
Right. Our PGA news and notes as we are inside the ropes will continue with Larry Miller after this quick commercial break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back inside the Quick and Loan Studios at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to rejoin our conversation with Larry Miller as we go inside the ropes. Hey, Larry Miller with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Gosh, I love when Larry's on the show each and every week. Of course, his new book, Tommy Bolt, was his teacher. His new book out is Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental. As we continue to recap the Players Championship, you had mentioned Sergio Garcia. Of course, he had a hole-in-one, but did you also see that lucky bounce he got on 17 at TPC Sawgrass where it hit the railroad tie and it had, you know, when it came back, it found dry land, which was a good thing for him, right, on that par three?
Yeah, that par three creates great theater, you know.
It does, yeah.
I mean, you see balls, you know, people hit 2-3 balls in the water. And, you know, when you play that golf course the first time and there's no crowd, and there's no pressure, all it is a little wedge shot. And the green is actually large. Mm-hmm. You can't tell from television, but it's a big green. And usually when you just play the golf course recreationally, you know, or just socially, the pin's usually in the middle of the green somewhere, and it's just a wedge, and it's no big deal at all. There's no pressure, there's no crowds, but all of a sudden, you know, put 10,000 people, 20,000 people around the green, put the pressure of the tournament in there,
wow,
and then hide the pin on that back right or front left or back left, and all of a sudden that little wedge shot is really difficult, and you see people choke, you know, left and right on it, and it's all because of that. But the hole is really rather benign under normal conditions.
Hey, I want to get your thoughts on Ian Poulter. You know, he comes up short, and what the story goes that it was, 2 weeks ago that he wasn't even in the field because apparently he had lost his PGA Tour card, but it was actually a miscalculation by the PGA Tour. What were your thoughts about just an incredible finish? Obviously, that energized him, and it was a game changer. It was a little bit bizarre. And then the comments from Brandel Chambly as well, some bold statements that he did not play to win. There's been some criticism about that.
Well, he hasn't won nearly as much as you would think he should,
mm-hmm,
because Ian Poulter is he's one of those great ball strikers we talked about. He hits, he's very accurate, hits a lot of greens in regulation, hits pure shots. And he is a great ball striker, but he has not won, you know, hardly at all, no majors, and not many victories either. And I don't know, you know, I think he was freed up after getting that, you know, getting the exemption on the miscalculation.
Mm-hmm.
It obviously really freed him up psychologically, and he went out there and played lights out, played really well. But he does seem to not be able to close. And that goes along with the short game. You know, a great ball striker, tee to green, you know, drives it in the fairway, hits the greens in regulation. But that doesn't mean that they're great around the greens, because ball striking is the full shots. And I believe that Poulter's problem is from 100 yards in. And if you watch the winners and the elite players who have every facet of the game, they are very strong from 100 yards in. Sergio is really good with the wedges. Probably one of the best is Steve Stricker with the wedges. Jordan Spieth, of course. And speaking of Jordan Spieth, I look for him to bounce back really strong.
Well, let's move ahead now. Let's talk about Larry Miller's brand new book, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental. And Larry, I know that you discuss in the book some swing practice drills that you included, right? Tell us a little bit about that chapter.
Okay, drills are something that you, what a drill is something that you work on. It's a piece of the swing that you're trying to perfect to fit into the whole swing. And the way you go about doing a drill is that you perform the drill, and then a number of times you repeat it over and over again, and then you just go and hit a few shots. But when you hit those shots, you don't think about the drill that you just did. And you keep doing this back and forth. And what happens is that the drill that you're doing starts blending into your technique. You don't want to think about the drill when you swing because that sort of freezes you up and prevents a smooth flowing swing. But you do the drill 3-4 repetitions, hit a few balls, you keep doing that back and forth, and what you're doing in the drill will work its way into your full swing. There are three particular drills that are very, very effective. One of them is what we call the 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock drill. Mm-hmm. And you take your driver and you grip down on the shaft so that the grip end of the club can fit into your belly button, okay, into your navel. So you put that end of the club into your navel, and you're gripping down on the shaft with both hands, your normal golf grip, with both arms stretched out. You hold the club 2 or 3 feet off the ground, and then you move back to 3 o'clock and 9 o'clock position. You can do this in front of a mirror to make sure you're doing it right. The key to this drill is to not let that grip end slip out of your belly button. You keep it there as you go back and forth from 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock. It's one of the best drills there is in golf, and what it does is that it synchronizes your core along with your arms, hands, and shoulders. You go back and forth, and that's the perfect position for the takeaway and for the beginning of the follow-through. And it's most bad shots are caused by the hands outracing the body or the body outracing the hands. And this drill teaches your body, your core, and your hands to move in sync back and forth during that critical impact zone. It's a wonderful drill. Another great drill is to practice your finish and hold your finish. Every shot that you hit, you want to come to a complete finish balanced. If you're right-handed, up on your right toe with all your weight on your left leg, belly button facing the target, and you want to be able to hold that finish balanced for a few seconds. Well, if you can't do that, it means that you were swinging out of balance and you're going to lose not only accuracy, but power as well. So you keep practicing the finish and holding the finish. And it's a drill, like I said, you do that number of times and you hit a few shots, and next thing you know, when you hit a shot, you'll be finishing in that balanced position. It's a wonderful drill, really helps your golf swing. And the next one is to practice setting the club at the top of the backswing. Mm-hmm. At the end of your backswing, you know, there has to be a transition from backswing to downswing. You can't just rush into the downswing. And if you watch any good player, you'll see him take the club back, set it, and then accelerate through the ball. But it's very, very critical that you actually set the club at the top. Now, granted, it's a very brief instant, and you're going to feel like you actually come to a stop, but you really don't. You really can't. But you want to feel like you do, and that prevents you from rushing down from the top with your hands, which ruins the golf swing.
Well, and your instructor, Tommy Bolt, he was one of the best ball strikers, and he always had perfect position at the top of his swing. I was, you know, watching some of his videos online on YouTube.
Yeah, and he had great balance, too.
He was a real artist.
Mm-hmm. He was not a technician. He, like mm-hmm. Ben Hogan, was a technician. But Tommy Bolt was an artist, and I'll never forget one evening he drove out in his golf cart while I was hitting drivers, and he looked at my driver, and he said, "Let me see that." And he was dressed for dinner. He had on leather loafers and a sport coat, grabs my driver, uh-huh. puts a ball on the ground, doesn't tee it up, off the deck, hits it about 260 right down the middle with a sport
wow.
coat and loafers on. Yeah. I mean, that's how good this guy was.
Oh, my gosh, that's
amazing. Ben Hogan once said that if Tommy Bolt had a different head on his shoulders, he'd win every tournament.
Oh, my gosh, that's incredible. Hey, the title of Larry Miller's new book is Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental. Larry joins us. Mr. Miller joins us each and every week, Inside the Ropes, PGA professional, and he is the author of several books. Always a true honor to have you with us. I could continue on our conversation, but you know what? We'll just look forward to huddling up next week. Thank you so much, Larry.
Great, great. And good evening to all of you listeners.
Absolutely. Stick around. Much more coming your way in hour number two at SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back to hour number two at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell, and indeed, the NBA playoff conversation, it does continue. We are thrilled to have back with us inside the Quicken Loans Studios. He is the producer. He is the host of In the Post with Hall of Famer Elvin Hayes. The great Joe George is back with us. Good evening, Joe.
What's up, Biggie? How are you?
Hey, listen, great to have you on the show. You always bring so much energy and insight. Talk to me, who have been some of your recent guests on In the Post with Elvin Hayes?
Yeah, so this last week, and you'll be able to catch the interview tomorrow as well on SB Nation Radio, Saturday, 5 p.m. Central Time. We'll have Eric Gordon of the Houston Rockets on the show. It's a great conversation and really insightful about what happened this season and kind of, you know, his view of being the healthiest he's been, you know, he played the most games since his rookie year. Because he's been healthy and in the right situation, and they manage his minutes well. And we go into that, what happened in that game six where they only scored 75 points. So great conversation with Eric, and a pretty honest one too for the most part.
You know, what did he share about that final game? Because I think a lot of Rocket fans were let down. They were very disappointed, and they thought that they would finish out strong.
Yeah, the key word that he consistently used was composure. He kept bringing up the composure of the team, how they handled the situation, and when it kind of started to get ugly, that they just didn't keep their composure throughout the game. And that's really why he felt like it kind of really got away from them. And he pointed out in the interview, the last two games they played were two of the lowest point totals they had the entire season at 75 and 92 points. So it was a team that was rattled. And he also goes in to say that, you know, it kind of sounds like they didn't really take the Spurs all that seriously with Kawhi Leonard out as well. And that was a major factor of the loss. And that's just part of it. I mean, they didn't look at the Spurs as a team that was there. And then when things got tough, they didn't really keep it together as a team.
What did you think about Mike D'Antoni's rotations as far as how did he go deep enough into his bench to keep his guys fresh? What did you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, when you lose Nene, it's tough because a guy like Sam Dekker is still not really ready for those minutes. Or is a guy like Montrezl Harrell. Like, they can make really reliable contributions in an 82-game regular season at this point. Neither of them are really, to me, playoff guys. So I understand where D'Antoni's coming from because they're not ready. But at the same time, you got to rest your players a little bit because I think a large portion of it for me was they just looked tired. They just looked like it was kind of they were done at the time. And I just didn't feel like the Rockets had their full effort in that game anyway. So I think he should have gone a little bit deeper and not use them for substantial minutes, but just use them at all to get Harden off the court and get Capella off the court. And he made that decision not to do so.
How do you see the 2017-2018 season playing out for the Rockets? And perhaps what kind of movement will we see in terms of player personnel, the additions, the subtractions? What do you think should take place?
My key takeaway from this series is that I don't believe that James Harden can be your primary point guard at all times. I think he can run with the ball, but I think he had a hard time getting his shot off when Nene went down. I think that was kind of the turning point for the series. So, you know, I think the Rockets need to look and invest in a legitimate number one point guard. A guy to me, like, I don't know if it's not financially possible right now. They'd have to make a lot of moves, and, you know, there's bigger questions there. But to me, you look at a guy like Chris Paul that will be potentially a free agent that you could bring to Houston, a guy that can successfully run on the ball and off the ball with Harden, I think would make a lot of sense. But I just don't think they have the pieces right now. I think they're close. I think bringing Lou Williams back for a full season would be very important as well. But they needed to do something different. And I just don't know if their roster as it's constructed right now will lead to anything different. And I'll also say this. I don't think it really matters. At the end of the day, like, I'm not really sure what they do, if it will truly impact them in a different way next season, getting past the Spurs and the Warriors. I'm just not sure it's logistically possible for anyone in the NBA right now.
Okay, the Spurs, the Warriors, how do you envision, where do you see the Rockets jockeying for position? Will they be one of those top four teams in the Western Conference?
No, I think they'll be the number two seed going forward for at least the next couple of years. I think the Spurs, you know, they're not always great in the regular season. I think they're going to have a little bit of a dip next year. We haven't really seen the impact of Ginobili and Parker go down and Gasol, but I think next year is where they're going to take a little bit of a dip, just to that four seed. So I think it'll be Warriors 1, Rockets 2 already. I'm pretty confident in that. If the Rockets don't get the 2 seed, it's because Gordon Hayward stays in Utah and they bring a great contribution in there, and the Jazz end up fighting their way for the number 2 seed. But the Rockets will be in the top 4, if not top 3 for sure next year, I think.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about the pieces of the puzzle for the Rockets. Hey, we got to shine the spotlight. Let's talk some more about James Harden, what he has meant to this team, and just your assessment of his overall play. And is he going to be that MVP?
You know, I don't think he's going to get the MVP this year. Obviously, the votes are long done. We just don't know the results right now. They were done in the regular season. I think they're going to give it to Russell Westbrook this year, just because of what he single-handedly accomplished. But even though I think you have to, when you do look at the history of the NBA, when Oscar Robertson set this record, he finished third in MVP voting behind Bill Russell and behind, I think it was Wilt Chamberlain, finished top two. And just so to me, when you look at it, If Westbrook doesn't win it, I wouldn't be shocked. Frankly, I wouldn't give it to James Harden either. I probably would have voted for this season, but really, to me, at the end of the day, the MVP is always LeBron James, and it should be no one else but LeBron James. But I would say James Harden has a good shot to win it. I just think Russell Westbrook might have gotten it because of the record.
He is so good. Joe George back with us in studio at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. He is our producer. He's also the host of In the Post with Hall of Famer Elvin Hayes. And, you know, as we talk about the Rockets, what has Elvin said about just his summary of James Harden and what he was able to accomplish?
You know,
year.
I think Elvin was really impressed to see it. You know, he knows Oscar very well, so he was excited to see the record be broken. But, you know, Elvin has an interesting perspective on basketball that I don't have, because obviously he played, but other than that, he's also a giant, and I'm not. Like, I'm 5'6", so, like, I understand the excitement of the point guard and guard position. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I really feel like Elvin, like, when I've asked him this conversation before, we actually talked about a little bit this week because of the LeBron-Jordan debate is up again, and I brought it up, and he just brushes me off because to him, Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain are the two greatest basketball players of all time because he believes in the big man. You know, that's what he believes is missing from the NBA. So when he looks at this Rockets team, he says they're missing a big guy like Dwight Howard, like a good Dwight Howard, like a good version of that, that could actually be the difference maker. But he was happy to watch James. He thinks it's so exciting, and he really does enjoy the game of basketball for a lot of what it is today. But he sees more of the downfall of it than I do.
What do you think about the postseason play? Because some say it's been a little bit dull. It's not been exciting finishes. Have you guys talked about that?
We have a little bit. I personally am pretty bored with it overall. I think we're, you know, heading into a pretty terrifying direction right now of where – what does the NBA really matter to people, I think, is a question that we're going to find out. Because if Kawhi is hurt or out, and then, well, if he's just not him when he's on the court, and then the Celtics get smashed like they have so far, even just looking back to game one, like LeBron dominated that game. And if they both sweep, we get a 9-day layoff. The finals start June 1st. No matter what, no ifs, ands, or buts, that's what the schedule says. They start June 1st. I already have interest problems in the NBA in a sport that I love. I don't know how I'm going to feel about it if I have to wait 9 days for the finals to start. So I think the NBA playoffs are pretty boring right now. They're not very close. They're not very competitive. And I think what people have to realize and see if they're okay with is I think we're kind of heading back to the 60s a little bit. And what I mean by that is in the 60s, from 59 to like 69, I think 6 or 7 times we saw the Celtics and the Lakers play for the championship. I think that's what we're walking into right now. I think this is going to be a Cavs-Warriors title for the third year in a row, but we might get 4, 5, 6, 7 years in a row where it's the only two teams really competing for it.
Never a dull moment when Joe George is with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. Before we go to commercial break, talk about what the Spurs fan files a lawsuit against Zaza Pachulia for the injury against Kawhi Leonard. I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. And I think it's just, I have a gut feeling that this guy is my age and falls into the millennial territory a little bit, because it's seriously just one of the most pathetic things I've ever heard in my entire life, that they would go out and they would sue him for something that is just illogical.
How do you think that's going to play out?
It's going nowhere. Because if he wants to sue him, then he needs to sue LaMarcus Aldridge, who did the same thing in the next game, to Kevin Durant. Because Greg Popovich also won't comment on that. But I really feel like the play that Zaza played, LaMarcus Aldridge did in the same thing for game two. He took that extra step on a closeout, and Durant landed on LaMarcus's ankle, but nothing bad happened. Kawhi's ankle is damaged goods right now, so it's not his fault. But yeah, that lawsuit's going nowhere fast.
Hey, the NBA conversation is going to continue with Joe George after this quick timeout at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios at SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio and the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Before we continue our NBA playoff conversation, we would love to connect with you. Join us at Twitter at eRadioSports. And always, you can go back and listen to each and every one of our interviews at podcastarena.com and all of our amazing hosts on our network. Well, one of our amazing hosts on our network is Joe George. He hosts In the Post with the great Elvin Hayes. And of course, Joe is with us tonight. Hey, Joe, before we continue the conversation here, talk to our listeners across the country. Where can they check you out? And of course, we were just talking about Eric Gordon.
Yeah, so Joe George Radio on Twitter is where you can find me throughout the network through the day in the morning parts, Monday through Friday producing. Then on Saturdays, you can catch me from 4 to 6 Eastern time hosting Sager and Joe with fellow producer Adam Sager. And then right after that, at 6 Eastern is In the Post with Elvin Hayes.
Hey, I want to get a quick hit tonight because Game 2 is underway with the Cavaliers at the Celtics. How do you see this series ultimately playing out? Can Boston play even win a game?
You know, I don't think so.
Okay.
I really don't think that they're going to get it because I think LeBron's on a different planet right now. He always has been. He's an incredible talent. I think he's the second best player
awesome.
Of all time. So I think Boston just doesn't have the guy right now that can really make that difference and get them the victory. So
how do you defend LeBron?
You don't. I mean, there's very few guys in the NBA that can even slow him down. You got your Durants, your Kawhi Leonards, your Jimmy Butlers, but that's it. Those to me are the three best defenders of LeBron in the NBA that we have at the moment. And if you don't have one of those three guys, it's going to be nearly impossible. And we saw, like, in game one, you know, Kyrie Irving gets shut down. But you see Kevin Love set a career record, career high in points. So this team, when they're on all cylinders, they're so hard to stop. And then LeBron, he can just do whatever he wants. It's not even just that you can – it's not about stopping him. It's impossible. Like, he's not stoppable. He's an immovable object. You have to try to slow it down as much as you can. It's just not possible.
You know, and whatever ultimately happens with the Celtics, I mean, how cool was that for them to win the lottery? And obviously –
incredible.
That is a franchise that is going to be moving forward.
Yeah, it is, because no matter how it plays out, like if they go get Markelle Fultz, who's supposed to be a special talent out of Washington, I'm a little lower on him than most, because I really believe if you're that good as Ben Simmons was, you should get your team to March Madness, and neither of those guys did. So I'm a little lower on Markelle Fultz for that reason. But if anything, if they want to make the decision, they can trade that pick and they can get major assets in return, just like how they acquired it. They can go get a Jimmy Butler, they can go get a Paul George, or they can draft Markelle Fultz and then go get Gordon Hayward and reunite him with Brad Stevens. So I think the Celtics are really on the rise. I just don't think they're there yet to get past the Cavs.
Hey, Joe George with us just a few more minutes tonight at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. Okay, we talk about the draft going to be coming up very soon. LaVar Ball, my gosh, I mean, this obnoxious father, how do you zip him up?
You don't. He's going to be here forever. I think he's going to be, until Lonzo makes the decision as a man to say, you're damaging my career and my reputation, then he'll always be there. And, you know, Lonzo's very quiet in the interviews, but he clearly loves his dad, and they clearly have a great relationship. And as crazy as LaVar Ball seems at times, he clearly believes in what he's doing. And the one thing I will say is that, like, he's been asked recently, like, what's your role going to be? And he said that he's going to coach up Lonzo in his view, tell him what he thinks he should improve on off the court. But he's not going to be screaming, trying to tell coaches what they should and should not do. If he gets drafted to the Lakers – and Luke Walton, if they get the first pick next year, is LaVar Ball going to go on TV and call for Luke Walton's head? Yeah, he is. But that's part of it. So until Lonzo makes a decision to cut off his father, which I hope it never comes to that for any father-son relationship, we're stuck with them.
Do you think that, okay, say talking hypotheticals, that he ends up with the Lakers, do you think Magic Johnson would allow him to attend practice?
No.
Okay,
no.
So they're going to draw the line there.
0% chance. I don't think he's at practices. He's not going to get special seats. He's going to get the same family seats that everyone else gets. If not, he can pay to move closer. So I just think that's the way it's going to be. I think Magic, that's why I think the Lakers are a great situation for him, because Magic will stop that. And that's the guy you want to learn from. You want to be the best point guard of all time? Well, you can learn from him. He's right there. And I think it'd be fascinating to see what would happen in that situation, because I think Lonzo is a special talent. I think he doesn't always perform the best. He doesn't have the best jump shot in the world. But what he has between the ears, basketball-wise, I think is really special. I think he's a really special passer. He seems so knowledgeable of the game. But we've seen him disappear in big moments as well, like we did in the final eight this year.
That's
so
right.
What's going to happen, I don't know. But I think that is the best fit for him.
Players to players, I mean, what do you think the perception is of Lonzo?
Oh, they're
going to
crush him.
Okay.
Yes. I think Lonzo Ball is a target now. If I'm in the NBA, if I'm LeBron James, if I'm anyone and LeVar Ball mentions me, I'm going after Lonzo. So I think Lonzo is almost going to be playing next year like he's on the Warriors. Like you always say, like you always step up for a champion, like no matter who you are. I think people are going to hear the talk from Lonzo. Even guys like an Elfrid Payton, who's like a good point guard, but like not anything special. Like those guys are going to step up their game and they're going to target Lonzo because he's obnoxious. Like his dad's obnoxious.
So what is your confidence level that the Lakers will not trade that number two pick, that they will definitely lock in on him?
I think it depends because, you know, we're looking at an organization.
And can
now.
You imagine if they don't? I mean, what team would take him?
Well, that's the next question is, like, what happens? He's not going to work out for anyone. That's pretty clear, cut and dry right now, so we don't really know. So what happens from there, I'm not sure. But at the end of the day, he's too good of a talent to pass up on. I don't see him falling past four. I don't see him falling past two. Like if he will get drafted by the Lakers for sure, I think. But the caveat is that the Lakers could then take that pick, and Magic Johnson and Kobe Bryant's former agent Rob Pelinka could then take that pick and trade for Paul George. So I think he'll either be a Laker or a Pacer without a doubt this next season.
Hey, Joe George has been with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Check him out with Hall of Famer Elvin Hayes in the post right here at our network at SB Nation Radio. Thank you so much, Joe.
Thank you, Big E.
That, of course, was Joe George, producer and host at SB Nation Radio. A very special thank you to all of our amazing guests, Freddie Coleman of ESPN Radio, Larry Miller, Inside the Ropes, and Chris Haft, San Francisco Giants beat writer for MLB.com. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show. So long, everybody, right here at SB Nation Radio.